Hi, this is Nancy Levy. Thank you for joining me today for Grief, Guts, and Gratitude. With me today is a new friend. Her name is Joanne Pierce. I met her this summer when I was in Northern Michigan, and a group of people would meet at a dog park every morning. Same time, same dogs. And there's a camaraderie at a dog park with the dogs and with the people. And I fell in love with dogs named Barker, Diesel, Ricky, Louie, and of course, Teddy, who I talk about all the time. This is a group of people that come from all different places around the country. And the thing they have in common is their love for their animals. And it's a wonderful atmosphere and a wonderful way to connect with people that maybe I would never meet in my lifetime. And one of those people is Joanne Pierce, a special grandmother who is a retired executive in the packing industry. She lives in Charleston, South Carolina, and in Northern Michigan in the summer. She's a graduate of MSU. And that doesn't even tell who she really is. She is a woman who paints a story like you can't believe. So when you're standing around the dog park for an hour and you're getting to know someone who you don't know at all, and topics come up and a story is told, and all I can say is, I heard this one story that she said, told, and I said to her, I think you need to be on my podcast. You have this amazing story about grief. And it's about grief with pets and animals. And I was blown away that this affected me so much. So I'd like to let Joanne start talking about the different things she's experienced with her animals and how they react and grieve and act when other animals around them die or are sick or aren't doing well or thrive. So, Joanne, I'm going to let you open this up because you tell a great story.
Well, thank you, Nancy. I've been told that before. To me, it's just a part of the conversation. I enjoy meeting people and sharing experiences. I also like listening to other stories from others, and certainly that's how we all learn. But for me and my animals, my husband and I were married in 1972, so we've been married 54 years, and I had never had a pet as a child. And my husband's aunt had this lovely collie, and I had told my husband, when we're in a position when I can have a dog, I want to have a dog. So I got my first pet in 1973. My husband bought me a collie, and his name was Mac. And since that time, we've had about six collies. But this story is, and of course, I could tell lots of stories about all the collies that we've had. Everyone has a special place in our hearts. But this story is about some horses that we owned. And I am not an equestrian. I'm afraid of horses. But my husband got his first horse when he was 2 years old. And when our first child was born, Brian just had the DNA. I think it's genetic. The love of horses is passed from generation to generation. And our son, Brian, absolutely loved horses. He had a learning disorder, and he learned to read by reading the encyclopedia of the horse. I had to buy him two versions of that book because he wore the first one out.
Oh, my goodness.
And a funny story, he was probably about 4 years old, and we would be in the car, you know, driving someplace, and our boys would be in the back seat. And every time we would drive by a field or a pasture that had a horse, he would say, look, Daddy, there's a horse. That would be a good horse for me. And there was always some reason why that horse wasn't the right horse for Brian.
Yeah, you were ready.
So this one day we're driving and we pass this horse in a pasture. And Brian says, look, Daddy, there's a nickel horse for me. And I said, Brian, What was that? He goes, well, you know, it's a nickel horse when a quarter horse is too big. So that's just how he, I mean, he just loved horses. And he got his first horse when he was 12 years old. And we got it primarily because it helped him learn how to read and to do well in school. As we were taking him to professionals, we had an educational psychologist told us that if your son could learn to be successful with something outside of school, that skill set would carry over into school. And that's something for our son was horses. So our son got us into horses, and it wasn't long. My husband had a horse. We ended up with five. We started out with five horses.
Did you live on a ranch, a farm? Where did you live?
No, we had to sell a house. We bought a house that had 10 acres. We put a little barn on it, and we had five horses in a small community called Honeyoy Falls, New York, in upstate New York. And that's where our children grew up. So it would be cute. I'd be coming home from work, and I'd pull onto our street, and the other kids would be riding their bicycles up and down the street, and my kids would be on their horses, riding up and down the street with their horses as their friends were on bicycles.
I love that.
So my children grew up with horses, and my husband bought a horse, I think it was about 1995, at an auction. We bought it from a gentleman called Harris Wilcox. And Harris owned an auction company in Western New York State. He was a very well-known auctioneer, but also a well-known horseman. And we bought a chestnut Morgan named Master. And Master was I personally thought he was kind of an ugly horse. I didn't really care for him that much. I'm afraid of horses anyway. But my husband loved this horse. Started working with him every day. Rode him, drove him. And my husband and children competed. We showed horses in carriage driving, which is not a very popular sport. But we went to one of Harris's auctions, and we said, Harris, would you like to stop by our house and see where Master lives? And Harris said, you know, when you sell an animal at auction, you're always concerned that the animal's going to go to a good home. And he said, I really would like to stop by and visit and see where Master lives. So Harris and his wife, Fern, stopped at our farm. They met Master. They met our other horses. And we actually became very good friends. So that started a strong relationship with Harris Wilcox because we purchased his horse, Master.
That's amazing.
So Steve started competing Master in this horse called Walnut Hill, which is held in upstate New York for many years, probably 35, 40 years. I would say 40,000 people over the five-day period of the show attended the show. It became a very well-known show for pleasure driving. And Master won everything. I don't think there was ever a class he didn't step into that he didn't win. He had the heart of an athlete. He was just an amazing horse. And we had the horse for maybe a couple of years, and Harris gifted Master's partner, Spirit, to my youngest son, Rick.
Wow.
So probably in about, I don't know, 97, 1998, we ended up with this pair of horses, two nicely matched chestnut Morgans, Master and Spirit. And Harris had competed with Master and Spirit, but wasn't particularly successful. And Harris would tell Steve, he said, I think that horse just likes you. There was something between Steve and his horse Master that clicked. Harris could never ride Master. Steve could ride Master.
Why couldn't he ride Master?
Master was a miserable horse. Oh. He was not.
So he didn't want him on his back. Is that it?
Okay. No. So Harris just couldn't manage Master, but something between Steve and Master clicked. So when Steve started competing with Master and Spirit as a pair of horses. And for people that aren't familiar with carriage driving or competing with carriages and multiple horses, hours and hours and hours every day, every day, every day. Those horses are harnessed to a carriage and they drive hundreds, if not thousands of miles. The roads in upstate New York were a common, it was very common for people to drive in our community and see Master and Spirit on the road.
That's so great. I love that, that visual.
Yeah. Horses, every movement of the horse has to be in sync. How they hold their heads every time they take a step. And they, that's just how they, that was their life. So Master and Spirit had been stalled together next to each other for years. And the one thing you learn is that you don't separate them. If we were showing Master as a single horse, Spirit would go crazy in his stall. They would cry, kick, let's just say they were very unhappy. They did not like to be separated.
So would you take the other with you when you did these things?
Oh yeah, they would have to go into the horse trailer together. They'd have to be loaded together. They just had to be together. Now, you could separate them, obviously, because we showed the horses separately. But wow, you had to deal with the one that was left behind. It was not easy.
It's very human, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's just a special relationship that these horses had. So as the years passed, Master and Spirit just, they won everything. I think they were, I don't want to overstate this, but they may have even been North American pair horse champions. I think in the 2001 carriage driving calendar, Master and Spirit were on the cover.
Amazing.
And if you ever see that calendar, it's a side view of the horse and carriage in competition. And even though there are two horses, it looks as though there's only one because they're in perfect sync.
Wow.
Their heads are perfect together. Their legs are perfect. It looks like they move and act as one horse.
It's really amazing. So did your husband, Steve, ever get any cover shots for himself or was all about the horses?
Well, I think predominantly he was in a number of magazines. These horses were featured a number of times, but generally it was all about the horse. It's not so much about the individual. It's all about the horse. People that love horses, they love to hear about the horses.
And did you become a person that loves horses through all this?
Oh, no. Oh, no. I mucked the stalls. I mucked the stalls. I cleaned the harness. I was happy to do that. That was my role in the Team Pierce event. I cleaned the harness, mucked the stalls, and Steve and my children were the competitors.
Okay.
And even it was, I tell people in pleasure driving, it's a very formal sport. And I say that my children were probably the only children at the age of 12 knew that you didn't wear a gray top hat after 6 o'clock. I mean, so they all had their tuxedos and
wow.
top hats. And it was a very, when you had evening classes, you were in formal apparel. It truly was, there was a gentleman who had worked for the Queen of England. And he came to the United States and worked as a trainer for some competitors. And he had said to Steve once, he said, when are you going to retire that horse so someone else can win? And he was referring to Master. For years, Master just won everything.
So here are these two horses that do everything together, win everything together. And then something changed, didn't it?
Well, yeah, of course, horses, like everyone else, we all age.
Mm.
And I think it was probably around 2002, 2003, we retired Master. We had a formal retirement for him at Walnut Hill. There was an afternoon program that was dedicated to Master. And I don't know if you've ever been to a horse retirement before.
Never. Yeah, probably never will, but okay.
But there were probably 5,000 or 6,000 people that were spectators. It was the major event for the program that afternoon. And the horse, you know, Steve drove the horse into the ring, and the announcer tells all of the accomplishments of the horse. We had Harris Wilcox was there, the previous owners of the horse, talk about the horse and his entire life. And then the horse is unharnessed, and he has his cooler put over him, and he's walked out of the ring, and he never competes again.
Do people applaud?
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course. And then we had a reception at Master's Stall afterwards, you know, so there was a cocktail party.
This is unbelievable, actually.
Yeah, we had his all of his trophies, and it was actually a very nice day for all of us.
It sounds amazing. So where was Spirit at this point?
Well, he was probably in the stall next to Master as the retirement was going on. And Spirit also retired, but Spirit did not have the accolades that Master had. Because Master competed as a single horse, but Spirit not so much. My youngest son used Spirit in the youth in the children's class, but I don't think we ever competed Spirit as a single horse in the adult class. I think Spirit only competed in pairs.
Well, you've painted this amazing picture of this pair of horses and the relationship that has had evolved over all those years, and how the camaraderie of what they had that most people don't have in their lifetime.
It truly is amazing. But at that time, we had moved to Atlanta, Georgia. We had a horse farm outside of Atlanta. And so Master retired to our farm in Atlanta, as did Spirit. They were both turned out to pasture, and they lived many, I'm going to say 4 or 5 more years. And at that time, I was working in New York City, and I was commuting between Atlanta and New York. So my husband was spending a few weeks with me in New York, and our son, Brian, at that time, now he's all grown up, he's 23, 24 years old, and he's taking care of our farm and the two remaining horses that we had at that time. I think it was just Master and Spirit. So Brian called, and of course he's distressed, and he said, you know, there's something wrong with Master. You know, he's sick, he's not doing well. And of course he's probably 25, 26 years old at this time.
Is that old for a horse?
Yeah, horses certainly live longer, but that's a life well lived for a horse. So I told him to call Jason, our veterinarian, have Jason look at him. And if he needs to be put down, I told Brian, put Spirit down too.
Oh,
because
boy.
He just knew that Spirit couldn't survive without Master. So Brian calls our veterinarian. Jason arrives and says, yes, Master has to be put down. But he refused to put Spirit. He said, Spirit is a healthy horse. He's going to do just fine. And he told Brian what to do. So he told Brian, once Master's gone, just let him lay in the pasture and let Spirit deal with it. And eventually, you know, he'll get through it. So Master was put down. He was laying in the pasture, and Spirit just laid down next to him.
Must have been the saddest thing to see.
Oh, I almost want to cry as I'm telling the story. He didn't eat. He didn't drink. He didn't get up. He just laid there. And then he got up, and they were nose to nose. He put his nose to Master's nose and just stand there, still not eating, not drinking. And then finally, and I mean, I think it was probably days, we had a run-in shed in the pasture, and he goes into the shed and just starts kicking the shed. We thought he was going to take the structure down. Still not eating, still not drinking, but eventually he started to take water and food. So Brian called a backhoe, came in, and buried Master in the pasture.
Wait, this is truly a horse grieving over his.
Yes.
I've never heard of this except for when you told me. I didn't know this happened. I know that we would grieve over our animal, but I didn't realize that the horse would grieve over the other horse like this.
Unbelievable. And then Spirit just stood on Master's grave.
Oh.
Just stood and pawed at the grave, just stood on his grave. So then my son, you know, we fed our horses. We had round bales of hay. So he had a round bale of hay set on top of Master's grave so Spirit, you know, could eat. And then eventually, as time passed, Spirit adjusted. But I don't know if he ever adjusted, but he started eating and drinking and lived for, I'm going to say, another 3 or 4 years.
Was he okay after all that? Did he really come out of it a little bit?
Well, I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, you have a horse that's turned out to pasture. I mean, it's, we eventually, because we were living in New York and we had our house up for sale. And I mean, we had our farm up for sale. Horses are a herding animal. They don't like to be by themselves. So we had some friends that had a horse farm not far from ours. And they agreed to take Spirit and turn him out to pasture with their other geriatric horses. So they had a group of, I'm going to say, 5 or 6 horses that were all elderly, and they were all turned out to pasture together. So we eventually moved Spirit to a friend's farm, and they took care of Spirit until it was time for him to be euthanized.
So the parallels between humans and animals, horses in this case, is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's, you know, and in preparation for today's podcast, mm-hmm. I thought, well, I wonder what, you know, the internet is saying about this. And it's interesting. I actually found some research that was done in, I think it was 2023, by the University of Lincoln in the UK.
Okay.
And they studied horses. I think there was almost 400 horses that they had studied, and where horses had special relationships. And what they described in this research is exactly what Master and Spirit went through.
So this is what happens, right?
Yeah, so now they're starting to do research on this. And of course, I think back to Jason, the veterinarian. I'm sure that if you're a large animal veterinarian with any, you know, substantial experience, you just know that this is pretty normal and what the reaction is going to be, because Jason told Brian exactly what to do and told him what was going to happen. But I found it interesting to realize that people are now conducting research on this.
Because they can't believe how human it is, I'm guessing, that this is how it happens for animals. I don't know if it's the same for dogs. I've only had one dog at a time. Do you have any experience with that?
Yes, and it's a very bad experience. We had a chocolate lab that belonged to my youngest son, Rick. And he got that chocolate lab when he was probably around 11 or 12 years old and spent a great deal of time training that dog. And Hunter was an amazing, wonderful chocolate lab. But as children do, they grow up and they go off to college. We had the pleasure of taking Hunter to our horse farm in Georgia. Well, my husband decided he wanted to get a border collie. So he bought a border collie. We named him Jet. And Jet and Hunter became best of friends. And of course, I'm commuting. I'm only home on weekends. And I came home one weekend and realized that Hunter must have been at least 13, 14 years old. And he couldn't get up anymore.
Mm.
So we called our veterinarian and made an appointment to bring Hunter in to be euthanized. So Hunter and Jet were best of friends. They were always together. So the morning came where we had to put Hunter in the car, took him to the vet, and he was euthanized. And we came back
Without him. Oh, God.
And that dog, Jet, the Border Collie, hated us.
Oh.
He wouldn't come. He ran away from home. If we tried to pet him or approach him, he acted like he was, like he had been abused. And we were leaving to go to this horse show in upstate New York. We had two tractor trailers full of horses and carriages. And our intent was to take the dog with us. So they got the dog, put him in the horse trailer, and we go to this horse show in upstate New York. He would go, the dog would go into other people's tack stalls. He wouldn't come to us. Again, we thought, you know, these people are going to think we have abused this dog.
He was angry at you.
He was absolutely not happy. So on the way home, I didn't go to Georgia, so I left Pittsburgh, New York, to go to my office in New York City, and we had two tractor trailers heading south to our horse farm in Atlanta. And I think it was around someplace in West Virginia. The tractor trailers had to pull off on the side of the road. There was some issue. My husband opened the door to the tractor, and Jet jumped out and wouldn't come back.
Oh.
So now my son calls me 6 o'clock in the morning. He's crying. What do we do? We're on the side of the road. We've got these horses. We're stuck. We can't get the dog to come. It's dark, you know. And I said, well, you have to go home. I'll drive to where you are.
Wow.
And I'll see if I can't get the dog. So they take the horses south. And I've got my 90-year-old mother with me. So my mother and I drive to, I think it was maybe Morgantown. And I think it was Route 81 southbound between exit 7A and 7B. And that border collie was roaming those exits.
Wait, how did you know that?
Well, we had the Humane Society. Well, first of all, my husband told me, this is where we are. We're at this interchange. So this is where the dog jumped out. So I called the Humane Society, and they said that they had a number of reports. The police were involved. The police asked me if they could shoot the dog with a tranquilizer so that because they were afraid the dog was going to cause an accident. So I said, yes, shoot the dog with a tranquilizer. Do whatever you can. So I'm driving there with my mother. I go to the Humane Society. They told me the various sightings that they had and that there was this lady that was working to try to capture the dog. And so I met that lady. We went out to dinner and we prepared a strategy to get this dog. I spent 2 days going door to door with any sighting of this dog to try to get this dog. After 2 days, I just gave up.
Oh.
I went to the Humane Society and I said, look, I'm giving up and I'm going to go home. You know, I don't think I'm ever going to find this dog. And they says, we don't know anyone that's done what you've done to try to get this dog back. So I left my information and said, if anybody finds him, just call us. So a year passes. We get a call. And they talk to my husband, and the gentleman says, are you the people that have lost this border collie? I said, yep, that's us. And he says, well, this border collie comes to my back porch every day, and I feed him.
Oh.
And I'm going to be on vacation next week, and I'm going to catch that dog. Do you want him back if we catch him? And I said, yep, we'll take him back.
This is unbelievable, by the way.
So my husband hung up, and he turns to me, and he says, he's never going to catch that dog. Sure enough, he never did. So that was the story of the dogs that we have. So those are probably the best two examples that I have of the impact of the loss of an animal has on another.
It's unbelievable. First of all, I want to say that you must have been relieved to know the dog wasn't dead. I'm guessing that even though you didn't end up getting him back, that's a horrible feeling to be grieving over your dog and not knowing, you know, what happened here?
My guess is that, you know, the dog was probably feral by this time.
Maybe. Yeah.
You know, he'd been surviving on his own. And I sort of, well, I'll be honest, I just don't know.
Well, you are amazing that you did what you did, because many people would not have been able to have the wherewithal to do that. And emotionally, that had to be so tough.
Well, I don't know. Frankly, I was ready to choke that dog to death if I ever got my hands on him.
Now, be careful what you say. Right.
I would have choked him. I was, you know, I can't believe, you know, the amount of time and effort to
try
to get that dog.
Well, you loved your dog and your husband loved that dog. So you would have done anything at that point. This is after the horses incident. Okay. So the parallels, I just can't believe the parallels with the grief, with the humans, with the animals. I mean, it's unbelievable. And we all have lost pets and know what that feels like.
I think that's really the only time where we've had two dogs. Generally, we just have one dog. So we really haven't had the experience of how dogs would react when there are two of them in a home, and then what happens when the one is gone.
You got to go get another one, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we didn't. We went back to a one-dog household, and that seems to work for us.
Your stories are amazing. I mean, when I got Teddy, and everyone hears about Teddy all the time, after my husband died, and people said to me, why are you going to get a dog? Remember what it felt like to have your other dogs pass away? Why would you want to go through that again? And you know what I said to them? I've been through the worst of it now. I lost my husband. So I may fall in love with my dog, and I do love him, but I can't imagine anything is going to hurt as much as losing my husband. I'm probably going to eat those words someday. I hope not. But I love my dog. I love, you know, it's a weird thing to fall in love with something and lose it. That we all know that that's the epitome of grief. That's it.
Well, I can number the times where I've cried, or I've had, I don't know if I would call it grief, but been truly emotionally sad. And it's been very few times. And, but it's times like, you know, when my son gets cancer, you know, that's a tremendous tragedy. So would I rank losing an animal versus, you know, dealing with a child who has, you know, a serious illness? It's probably not the same. So it's not just when you lose a spouse, or it's when a loved one gets critically ill. You know, there are lots of times we go through those types of situations, and we always seem to get through it. I don't think we're ever the same, but I find it's easier for me, I think, to deal with the loss of a pet or an animal than dealing with serious illnesses of family members or
I
losses.
I understand what you're saying. Totally. Yes. But the thing about the animals is they're helpless and they can't talk to us. And I think that's why we get sucked into the love of them and taking care of them and, God forbid, losing them. I mean, after you and I spoke, I was at a friend's house, and she's an amazing equestrian. She loves her horses.
Yeah.
So I told her about our conversation and that you were going to come on the podcast because I thought your stories were so interesting. So she said to me, come with me for a minute. And she took me into her master bathroom in her house, where there were multiple containers and urns of horses of hers that had passed away. And she said, I totally get what you're going to talk about, because these are my horses. These are the ones that are gone. And there they were every day. She looks at their remains. And I was so blown away by that. I mean, she just really still feels the love of her pets. Amazing. That's amazing to me. Then I realized I still had two containers of ashes of my last two dogs that I forgot were in my house somewhere. I mean, I did it too. So
I think what's different, at least from my observations of having a husband and a son who were equestrians. I think what's different with horses, I don't think people, especially if you're competing or showing horses, the amount of, you're actually working together. The amount of time that you're with that horse and training and working, it's much more time than you are with dogs, at least from what I'm observing.
Yeah.
You know, other people might think differently, but I think of the hours and miles that Master and Spirit put on those roads in upstate New York. I don't think most people do that with their dogs or their pets.
No, I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when you watch competitions where they're doing dressage and those horses take years to be able to do those routines, you know, the relationship between that rider and the horse, you just can't even imagine that.
It's got to be that you're like one. You're on that horse. You're one.
Yeah. It's just a different relationship with the pet. Sometimes I don't think of horses. They're not pets. They're partners. They're more than companions. They are, you know, you're working together. The horse and the equestrian are working together to achieve a goal. You generally don't do that with pets. Mm-hmm.
I like what you're saying. It's a good way to explain it. I think it works. I've seen you with your dog, Barker, and yeah. I know how much you love him and care for him. And it would be different. It definitely would be different.
Yeah, I don't think of horses as pets. I don't know. Last Tuesday, I went to a program at the Charlevoix Library where they had a program on the bald eagle in Michigan. And there was a lady that brought a bald eagle. And I think she had had the bald eagle since the eagle was 6 months old and the eagle was now 20.
Wait, was this in a cage of some sort?
No, I mean, it was, well, she brought him in a cage, but then the eagle was out on her arm.
Wow.
I had my picture taken with the eagle, but someone asked her a question. Well, so what's your eagle's name? And she said, doesn't have a name. It's bald eagle. It, you know, this is a wild animal. It's not a pet. It's, you know, and she says, we all have to remember that these are, even though this particular bald eagle couldn't survive in the wild anymore, it's not a pet. So I think it doesn't matter what animal you have. There are some animals that can be pets and some animals that shouldn't be pets. And I never think of horses as pets.
It's interesting. I like how you're explaining it. I wonder if my friend who showed me her horses after they were gone would agree with you. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think of them as pets. I think of them as almost work partners.
It makes sense. It does make sense. Yeah.
You're working together to achieve a goal.
I mean, we know from being with our dogs at the dog park that they all have these personalities, personality plus, where they're all running around and we watch them interacting and having fun and being joyful and maybe going off on their own because they're feeling sad. They're being rejected by the pack at that moment. And they are very much like people. They're like kids. They're our kids. And that was fun watching everybody with their pets like that. And I guess since my podcast is Grief, Guts, and Gratitude, how grateful we are to be able to have the relationships we have with them, because when we leave the dog park, we might curl up, read a book, and they're next to us, and we're so happy to have the companionship. It's different. You're right. It's different than what we're saying about the horses.
Well, I was just going to say, when we go to the dog park, part of the joy, I mean, it's absolutely fun. We laugh out loud when we see how these dogs run together and chase each other and play. I mean,
it's wonderful.
And we've made so many friends. As a matter of fact, if you're free, the dog park group is going out to dinner tonight. At Torch Lake. So.
I'm not up north right now, but boy, is that tempting. It was very enjoyable. It was enjoyable to get to know everyone. It was enjoyable to watch the relationships with the people and then the relationships with the dogs, because we all were looking out for each other's pets at the same time. And I thought that was amazing. So I was really grateful to have that experience this summer. I can't wait to do that again. That was the highlight of my day. Is having my dog smile at me because he was tired and I was happy because he would be knocked out for a while and I wouldn't have to deal with him because, you know, I always say Teddy's a lot, but I love him.
And fortunate, I mean, if we're all fortunate, we'll all be back next year. As now in the next few days, you know, everyone is leaving and we're all saying our goodbyes at the dog.
And by the way, that's going to be hard for the dogs because they won't have their little group. And there's a sadness. I saw my dog was so sad when we came home and there were not a lot of other dogs around. And he liked that. He liked having his buddies. So yeah. I think that I want to say that there's so much like people. You know, your stories are great because most people wouldn't have an opportunity to hear a story about how two horses had an amazing relationship and what happens when one is gone. And the same thing with losing a pet. But I thought it was fun to watch the interaction of all the dogs and all the people. And it truly added something to my life this summer. That is for sure.
I enjoy meeting all the people at the dog park. I used to refer to my mother as she'd go to the old geezers club, you know, where she'd go to McDonald's, you know, every morning to have her coffee in the group. Well, that's sort of like what it is at the dog park. We've all become very good friends and the dogs have our friends and we've all established a great relationship. And hopefully we have a number of our dog park friends that will be visiting us in Charleston this winter.
Wait, do they bring the dogs?
They're welcome to bring the dogs.
Okay.
I'm sure they probably will. You know, so we can accommodate a dog.
Even my dog who's so gigantic and really poorly behaved. Right.
Listen, our yard is fenced in. And we have about an acre, so they can do just fine. They'll have a good time outside.
I think it's all so great. It makes me sad to think that the pets or the horses that experienced loss really can hurt like that. I did not know that. And it makes me sad for them. But I guess the one horse ended up okay. And that was a good thing for me to hear.
It's just like all of us. When we have a loss, you deal with it, you recover, and you move on. Life may not be the same, but you keep going.
That's, by the way, it in a nutshell. That's what I've been talking about all these months. That's what it is. And if you're lucky enough to get back on your feet and be able to function, thrive, not just survive, I think that's the key.
Yeah, life goes on.
Life goes on. And I'm so glad that my life was going on, that I got to meet you, and I can't wait to see you again. And this is interesting. I found out the other day, it's almost the end of August, but August is National Grief Awareness Month. Did you know that? Because I did not know that. August 30th is National Grief Awareness Day. And on that day, it's observed annually. We're supposed to try to have conversations about loss, could be animals, could be people, and the way we've experienced bereavement. So I thought that that was kind of an interesting thing before the end of this month to mention because I did not know that. So,
nor did I.
There we go. Right. Now we both know something.
Yeah.
And hopefully move forward into happier things. You know, I mean, there's nothing happier than being outdoors with all the dogs, with all the people running around. The sun is shining in a wonderful climate. And that's what I want to have as a takeaway from our talk about loss with pets and animals. But I so appreciate you coming on.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's always a joy to spend some time with you and
Thank
the other
you.
Folks at the dog park. And I'd like just anytime.
Well, you have a whole year to come up with some other stories because clearly when I heard that story, and you tell a great story, by the way, I was blown away. So you blow me away. How do you like that?
I don't know about that. I'm not. Well, thank you. That's very nice. I appreciate those kind words, but I don't think of myself as being any particularly gifted in any particular way, but I certainly enjoy life.
You know what? I love that. I think enjoying life is the most positive thing ever. So, yeah. Joanne, thank you so much for joining me today for Grief, Guts, and Gratitude. I loved having you as my guest, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, well, certainly next summer, I hope.
I hope so, too.
And it was my pleasure. Glad I could help.
Thank you. And thank you so much to the listeners for joining me today for Grief, Guts, and Gratitude during National Grief Awareness Month. And always have conversations about how you feel when people are gone, because it helps us get through and be grateful.